You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, could a core of apprentices help solve the labor shortage? President Trump, who, as you know, hosted a reality show called The Apprentice, thinks so. Last summer, he signed an executive order to double down on apprentice programs.
We're empowering these companies, these unions, industry groups, federal agencies to go out and create new apprenticeships for millions of our citizens. Apprenticeships place students into great jobs without the crippling debt of traditional four-year college degrees.
That was a year ago. What has happened since then? And here are some other questions for our conversation. Should more high school grads forego a college degree with the debt that the president talked about and embark on a learn and earn kind of education? And I'm going to be interested in which fields are particularly positioned for apprenticeships. The Mankato Free Press wrote recently about how trucking companies are creating more training apprentice positions to get more truckers on the road. The Duluth News Tribune has written about bringing more apprentices into the plumbing industry. And a congresswoman from Nevada wants to create apprentices in the cybersecurity field so more people can be trained more quickly. So as our guests give us some perspective, I'd like to hear from you. Is your company investing in an apprentice program? Tell me about how this might work in your profession. And if an apprenticeship sounds more doable than a four-year degree right now, how are you making the decision about which path to take? So if your company's investing in this, maybe you've done an apprenticeship, would love to hear about your experience. And if an apprenticeship really sounds more doable, more reasonable for your career goals, talk to us a bit today about how you're weighing that decision. Four-year degree, specific job training, apprenticeship. I'd like to hear your experience on that. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, wherever you are in the region. And then on Twitter, at CarrieMPR. William Spriggs is with us. He's chief economist to the AFL-CIO and a professor at Howard University. And he joins us from D.C. And Bill, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Carrie.
You do prefer Bill, am I right?
That's fine.
All right, good. Jackie Dukowitz is with us, Director of Human Resources Training and Development and at the Ultra Machining Company in Monticello. And she's with us today from Monticello. Jackie, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
Jackie, I guess I would ask you whether you think the idea of what it is to be an apprentice needs an upgrade, that we have a rather dated image about what this is.
Oh, in short, yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, you know, this is something we talk a lot about here on the manufacturing side of the house, but I think it still is a little bit of a foreign concept here in America. We don't have a lot of wide exposure to apprentices unless you're kind of in this already. So I think that, you know, it's a big conversation that we want a lot of people involved in.
And Bill, what do you think the image is, this rather dated image that Jackie confirms that we kind of have about what it means to be an apprentice?
Well, we have a low union density in the United States, and countries that specialize in apprenticeship as a training method have a higher level of union density. So we tend to think about it in the more narrow area of construction. And, of course, our building trades are very active with apprenticeships, but our machinists are very active. That's how the aerospace industry operates. And it's a very successful model for producing the kind of workers that Boeing and Lockheed need.
But I guess I was asking you if this is the idea of apprenticeships outside of construction, outside of the machining industry, is something that, I don't know, you know, the rest of the professional world really understands, you know, the value to this. Your insight on that would be valuable, I think.
Well, again, the model works in Europe because the workers are unionized and companies, broadly speaking, share in the expense of training the workers. In the U.S., it's a little harder to organize because our firms, beginning in 2000, have drastically reduced the amount of money they spend on training. So in the U.S., we don't think of it in the same way as it occurs in Europe. But in Europe, whether you're a baker or if you're going to do meat cutting or just about any profession, it's unionized there. The companies participate in the training exercise, and it's very widespread in the way that they interpret how workers will be trained, certified, and get connected to employment.
I want to delve into that more. That's a really good point about the training and the idea of what this is. But we have a number of callers here to James in Minneapolis. James, it sounds like you're doing a pretty interesting apprenticeship. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I am currently working at an upholstery shop in Bloomington, Minnesota, and it's an apprenticeship. Originally, when I started the job, I wasn't really, you know, kind of interested in trade or anything, was just kind of looking for a second job. And after being around it and seeing it and experiencing it, I've fallen really deeply in love with what I do and what it's all about.
How did you end up there?
Just through word of mouth. I had a friend that was working there, and, you know, they needed somebody to kind of help be a little bit more of the muscle in terms of moving the furniture, you know, from clients' houses and doing deliveries and things like that. But, you know, with needing a little bit of help, because there really isn't too many people doing it, I started getting slowly trained into it and fell really deeply in love with it and have just been kind of excelling and going forward with that.
So do you think, James, if you had been on the path to a 4-year degree, I mean, who knows, you might have found something that you enjoyed too, but you've kind of found a passion that there it was, you were unaware of it. And as the president says, you don't have a lot of crushing debt, right, as a result of this.
Well, I mean, I don't have crushing debt, but I do have debt because I was unfortunately going to school and couldn't afford it. I couldn't find any co-signers for my student loans, and that was unfortunate. And I was going to school for graphic design, and I loved it. I love graphic design, and I love art. And so this job kind of ended up being a little bit of that. It encapsulates art, encapsulates, you know, hard work, you know, getting to play with power tools, all that fun stuff.
I'm really glad you heard the show, James, and you called. Let me take a call here from Andrew in Rochester. Hi, Andrew. Sounds like you're doing a very different kind of apprenticeship. What is it?
Yeah, I'm part of the IBM New Collar Apprenticeship.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure nationwide, but it's doing firmware development, my role. I came from a psychology background and had a web development job towards the end of college, but by then I think it was changed majors. Was now at a boot camp in the Twin Cities, Prime Digital Academy, and then found my way to this apprenticeship. So I'm having an opportunity that I never would have had in software engineering, doing very low level firmware with hardware.
Andrew, your phone cut out a little bit there. I think I heard you say that you were a psychology major. You went into web development, and this apprenticeship lets you do this without having to go back to school and change your major and add on more years of schooling. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks much. Good to have the call. So, Jackie, here's what I want to ask you. Is it right to position this as, well, you either get a 4-year degree or you do an apprenticeship? I don't want to set up a false dynamic on this. How do you see it?
I think that's a really relevant way to look at this because it's not an either or. We like to look at this as a lot of different entrance points and exit points throughout this whole journey of employment. And I think some of that is the stigma that comes wrapped around apprenticeships. Like, I decided to go into this trade and now I'm locked in and all I'll ever be is that position. So what we're trying to do as a company is set up these different opportunities within the career path of a machinist or an apprentice who can stay and go through several levels of more and more skilled machining. They could maybe add additional learning and education and go into programming, which still interacts very technically with the work that we do, or perhaps add another 2-year degree on and go into that engineering side of the house. But all along the way, they're earning money, they're paid in their apprenticeships, they are having that on-the-job experience and exposure, making them a very valuable employee, no matter which track they pick. But it doesn't have to be that. If you're like our previous callers here, Andrew and James, in your second career,
right,
you bring other skills to the table as well, and you might find yourself on a path into more of the front office position as well. So I get worried that people think it's one or the other.
Right.
Or once you commit, it's a lifetime sentence. It's just, it's not like that, and that's some of the stigma we're working to break down by giving breadth and opportunity.
You know, Bill, I think you alluded to this a few minutes ago about maybe how companies have to think differently about what apprenticeships can be, even in this idea of you may be in one part of the company, you really would be more valuable to us over here. Do they understand the possibilities of apprenticeships?
No, they don't. But again, they're successful for workers when workers help to set the terms of what the apprenticeship will be, how long it will run, participate in the training, and get to negotiate what the wage will be when I finish the apprenticeship. That's the real key. So whenever people look to Europe and say, what a wonderful system they have to understand the total package that gets incorporated. When it occurs, as in Europe and as in the U.S. with most of our unions here, it's because employers have gotten together to agree upon a set of standards that the apprenticeship program will meet. This gives the worker a lot of mobility. So once they finish, they're going to stay within the industry, not just at the company. And again, this is the way that the program leads to higher income for workers. It's the case in the U.S. because we don't have very good active labor market policies,
mm-hmm,
that training, just general training, doesn't tend to work because it doesn't have the additional intermediary between the trainer and the employer. And that's where you hear people being frustrated when they go to, say, a for-profit two-year school or a for-profit professional training school, and then they say, oh, they wasted their money.
Yeah.
They don't have that intermediary step of already being linked to the employer. They also don't have employers providing the equipment that's state-of-the-art. So the employers don't necessarily know what they're getting. They also don't know that the person is up to skills. So in the U.S., for instance, if you go to where our unions train you to be an electrician, you will see state-of-the-art. You know, I'll just talk about changing traffic lights. That technology is changing rapidly. We're getting smart traffic lights, as an example, throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
Electricians trained through the union will be working on the exact equipment so that employers will know this person is ready for whatever the current cutting edge is. So it's a little more than just one employer thinking it up. It really takes the industry, and it really takes, are the workers going to get paid at the end? That's why it works in Europe. That's why it's an alternate path to the middle class and sustainable living in Europe. In the U.S.,
in a way that it isn't here.
In the U.S., you need that extra push to make sure that I'm going to have rising wages and that I will be able to take this certificate of being graduate of the apprenticeship to many employers who will recognize what I've done.
Jackie, to what Bill just said here, I know that this has been a topic of conversation at state government levels and private industry for a long time, how to link up what students are being educated for and what companies need. How do you see that as somewhat of a barrier to really pushing this apprenticeship program into, you know, more fruition here?
I do, and I think that's a really difficult concept sometimes to connect all the moving parts on. You know, industry and our precision manufacturing business move at the speed of light. You know, we're continually investing in the latest and greatest technology. We're moving faster than the tech schools and trade schools can keep up with. So there's no way their equipment is as advanced as ours is. And they need to learn the fundamentals. They need to be exposed to that very basic information and get those opportunities at school, but then the work and the hands-on experience and exposure that happens within our shop, it's like you can only get that when you're here in our business. Some of the other challenges are these traditional models within the school system that you quite literally have to take time off of your life to go to school during that 8 to 4 daytime hours,
mm-hmm,
and then how do you support your family when you have to go to school during the day and when work at night and balance it all? So we're continually putting pressure on our community college partners for flexible programming that they can work during the day when some of our support resources are here.
Right.
They can go to school, you know, at varied hours and yet still within a reasonable, let's say, 2-year time frame, so that we're all working together to move this through both the educational system, the employment, the access to that technology. It's quite a dance at times.
This is a conversation, if you've just gotten in on it, about apprenticeships with Bill Spriggs, a professor in the economics department at Howard, and Jackie Dukowitz, who's director of human resources and training at the Ultra Machining Company in Monticello. I want to hear from you this morning, hearing from a number of you who have been involved with these apprenticeships, really valuable to get your experience of whether that apprenticeship led you into a field that you've turned out to love or really gave you skills that are important. I want to hear from people who are within companies. Maybe you do what Jackie does in your company, you know, head of training, or maybe you're running a smaller company. Do you see the value of apprentice programs? Have you initiated them? What are the barriers to bringing more apprentices into your company? 651-227-6000. If you're somewhere in our 5-state region, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Michael says, due to the huge vacuum of skilled trades, I went to a trade school. I'm now an electrician apprentice. Better pay and benefits that last my career. And to Taylor in Fargo, North Dakota. Hey, Taylor, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
What's
your experience been?
So I'm currently going to a 4-year university for computer science, and I believe that computer science is a field that would greatly benefit from apprenticeships.
Aha.
Senior developers are in very high demand because they know how to work in the field, and new graduates often have problems with getting trained in. Companies don't necessarily like training in new developers, junior developers, because then once they have those skills, they will move on to a company that can pay them higher.
So Taylor, are you doing an apprenticeship, or you're actually in a college degree program for computer?
I am in a college degree program. Uh-huh. However, I feel like there may be more benefits to an apprenticeship program, learning hands-on experience in the workforce, because the classroom setting varies much from a typical work type environment.
Yeah, this is a really good point. Jackie, how about that? I mentioned this congresswoman who believes we ought to open up apprenticeships in cybersecurity, similar kind of field.
Yeah, I mean, we've had numerous instances of success with our apprenticeship program. And as a mother, I have 2 sons, 1 in 6th grade and 1 in 7th grade, and I often talk about STEM and early exposure to the career opportunities. And I think as a parent, what you want to know is that you're going to have productive members of society, and the sooner that they are in well-paying jobs and then, in our case, can follow a structure such as learn this at school while you're employed, it also implies that security and knowledge that you're on a path to a career, not just a job. And so what you're looking for on my HR side of the house is employees who are engaged with the work that they do, much like he was talking about with his computer program. He's got all the drive, all of the education, but he needs that hands-on training. So as parents, you know, can you give my students and my future workers that hands-on training, and they're earning money and they're on a path here to success earlier, rather than, let's just use the kind of garbage example, and I hate to generalize, of going to a 4-year degree and maybe finding yourself and spending a ton of money figuring out what it is that you're going to do with your career.
Jackie, one of the things that the Obama administration report in 2016 said, and I think you and Bill have alluded to this, is that apprenticeships are not fully understood in the United States, quoting from the report, especially by employers who tend to use them for a few hard-to-fill positions. So you've got companies, it sounds like, that are open to the idea of apprenticeship. They don't know how to fit them in to the best value. Why?
And that's some of the stigma. And from an HR perspective, you know, it seems like there'd be a lot of paperwork. It seems like there's a lot of rules to follow. And I'll tell you, sometimes it can be challenging working with the educational system and trying to run a profitable business. And so in the middle there, there are intermediaries that will help ease companies into what it means to have, let's just say, an all-but-registered apprentice. You can do all of the foundational or fundamental pieces of an apprenticeship and try it out. Run a pilot program. Run one employee through a sequence of training events while they're getting their degree and treat it as if it were an apprenticeship program. But I think people think it has to be this huge,
right,
monumental work to get it all into your system. You just got to start small, and you've got to learn as you go, evolve, and continue to make sure that we're meeting both our company's needs of employees who are productive sooner and that we're giving our employees the opportunity to get that education along the way as well, so that they, to Professor Spriggs's earlier point, are employable not just for us, but within the industry.
Call here from Bob in Matamidi. Bob, it sounds like you've got a company and you're doing this. How's it work?
Well, it works great. I've got to admit, my experience is somewhat limited, and we're in the graphic design business.
Mm-hmm.
So we would typically contact the colleges that have good four-year design curriculums in graphics and indicate what our needs were, what sorts of projects we were working on at the time. And then the instructors or the directors of those graphics programs would go to their students, either junior or senior year level, and say, we have a apprenticeship in Chicago. They're working on a big library project, whatever. We would do a lot of print graphics as well.
So, Bob, let me ask you this. How many, in a given year, how many apprentices do you think the company that you work for has?
Well, at the time that we were working directly with the apprentice programs, we had a staff of 15 designers full time, and we would typically hire on a semester by semester basis one or two apprentices.
I think your experience is really valuable here, because Jackie, I just want to come back to you for a minute. You know, not to undermine what Bob is saying. Hey, they were experimenting with this. But I think I hear you saying is don't think of this as we've got a couple positions here and now we're going to go out and find those people to plug them in. Yes?
Of
this a different way. Okay, no. Tell me what you're going to say.
No, I agree. How about this? We've committed to this whether or not we have an open position at the time.
Uh-huh.
Now, at the end of the day, we always have an open position, so it hasn't ever had to balance itself out. But much like funding, there are grant opportunities, or as you've been speaking throughout the show, ways to get this to be less of an employer burden. And we have to engage at this at a level that says whether or not we get any funding, it's still the right thing to do. This is still our strategy for bringing our pipeline of talent into the business. And we do also, on that note, have engineering internships that we have and co-op programs as well. And I just want to be clear, UMC is a company of 200 in Monticello. We're not a huge, huge employer.
Yeah.
And over the past 25 years, we've had, you know, dozens of apprentices go through our programs. Currently, 9 in a company of 200.
Yeah, that's a commitment. It must be valuable.
It is.
To Ultra Machining. Hey, Bill, I wanted to also ask you about something Dennis in Duluth called, and he said the contrast, and I think actually you mentioned this, the contrast between us and the rest of the world is that this kind of work can lead to a middle class income. That I think you were saying this before is often in where they open up apprenticeships, it's not a pay in a profession in which you can lead a middle class life. Is that right? Clarify to me what you were saying about that.
So in Europe, the system works because all of these lead to paths to middle class life because they're all unionized and the wages are negotiated to reflect that. And so when we in the U.S. look at, they give students free college in Europe, we would think, wow, that's unbelievable, but they don't have that many people who have to go to college in order to earn a decent wage, because if you finish an apprenticeship and you're in a union, you get paid well in Europe. So you look at being paid while you're the apprentice plus what they get paid once they finish in Europe, and you can see why many people in Europe choose apprenticeships.
Right.
In the U.S., we have a lot of problems. The wages of everyone, including those with associate degrees in the United States, have been falling. So apprenticeships aren't just the answer to falling wages. And it's the case that in many of the occupations where people say, oh, you know, why don't Americans go into manufacturing? But we've lost millions of manufacturing jobs. And so it's a broader context in which it takes place in the rest of the world, because workers' voice is heard in how economic policy will be pursued and what wage levels will look like and what the benefits look like. And this flattens the curve between those who get associate degrees and college degrees, those who have these apprenticeship accreditations, and those who get a college degree. And that's why it works in the rest of the world. In the U.S., it works for our members because they have negotiated contracts that help to protect their jobs. At least it gives them a voice when it comes to that sort of decision. And it assures that they're going to have a decent wage when the job is done. And again, because apprenticeships really work when industry is committed to the training. The workers have the mobility. And that's the other key element. It doesn't work as well for the worker if it is a certificate that I can't take to another employer and say, look, this is what I can do, and the employer readily understands what I'm capable of doing.
I see.
That's a key element that has to be part of a successful structure.
Marcus says, I grew up in Switzerland and I finished my 3-year apprenticeship by the age of 18, ready and able for the job, no debts. Check out worldskills.org to see the breadth of the professions that the United States is missing. And please explain that an apprenticeship ends with a recognized diploma. Jackie, does that happen in the States? You get a diploma?
Yes, absolutely. An Associate of Applied Sciences in Machine Tool Technology.
Okay.
Absolutely,
right.
Yes.
And a call here from Carol in St. Paul. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you want to say?
Well, I became a registered nurse in the 1960s in a similar program. We didn't call it apprenticeships. We were called student nurses. But many of the skills we needed to have were taught by taking care of actual patients supervised by professional nurses. And my family could not have afforded a 4-year college program. So the cost was much less because we also spent some hours during the week working for our room and board. And at the end of it, in 3 years, I qualified to be a registered nurse. And it just came to me that this is very similar to apprenticeship.
It is. I know.
Healthcare.
You're right.
It's,
as you noted, not called that, but that's exactly what you were doing.
Exactly.
Without the college debt.
Learning the skills.
Good to have the call, Carol. A listener here says, my oldest daughter is a senior planning on going into aircraft mechanics and welding. We put her in greens and handed her a welding rod at the age of 7. She was hooked, and while she would be an awesome engineer, plans on doing the trade route. To the phones here to Ben in St. Paul. Ben, it sounds like you have a question for our guest. What is it?
Well, I have a question. I'm currently working in the space of what exactly you're talking about, so I'm really excited to hear the conversation. But
okay.
I'm doing this with high school students.
Ah, good.
Helping high school, you know, young men and women find their passion and their interest, certainly in an apprenticeship or an internship capacity, because what we've heard from our partners is that if they're waiting until students are in their late teens, early 20s, they're saying it's too late. They're looking to engage with young people in their 14, 15, their sophomore, junior year of high school and getting kids into these programs then. And I think one last piece I'd shout out to the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry is doing a lot of work with a youth skills training program as well as an apprenticeship program where they're providing resources to get programs like these up and running, as well as programs for employers that are looking to either train up new individuals to the industry or retrain those within their organizations to the tune of $6,000 per employee per year, up to $150,000 for the company.
Aha. So this is really benefiting the company to get involved in this. First question, Ben, is a good one, though. Jackie, what about at the high school level? Is Ben right when he suggested if you're waiting until kids are graduating or, you know, maybe that first year of college is too late?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. And we were realizing this exact same thing, that by the time we are engaging with them, they've already committed to their community college or vocational trades, and they're already in. What we need is to expose people earlier to these opportunities before they've made up their mind or before they don't know they need to get exposed to this career. So UMC, with this youth skills training in mind, again, we sought that funding to get access to those funds that he talked about, and we did not get it, but we still went through and put together a youth STEM program for 16 and 17-year-olds within our shop.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means, instead of focusing on what they can't do, you know, they cannot operate a machine at age 16 and 17, but they can still be exposed to manufacturing, machining, and all the different areas within our organization, and they were paid for their summer jobs for 8 weeks of work, $11.50 an hour, to come and get exposure at 16 and 17, and hopefully then they'll feed right in to our youth apprenticeship program and then ideally commit to that college and get into our a regular apprenticeship program. So by the time they graduate their two-year degree, they actually could have 4, if not 5 years of manufacturing experience under their belt and a degree, and they've been paid since they were 16 years old.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill, this reminds me of, isn't it the case that there are some Pell grants for short-term training courses from the federal government? You aware of that?
Well, we have experimented. We're trying to make it possible for people to use their Pell grants for other than
traditional college.
Traditional college.
Uh-huh.
I'm not aware of the circumstances you can use them for that, because they have to be tied by legislation to college attendance. I'm sure there are some community colleges that are working with their job training WIA board, their one-stop board, to develop and merge the courses so that that can take place. And in Europe, speaking to your earlier conversation, in Europe, of course, people start earlier in
right.
their apprenticeship. It's tracked at the high school level. So those students who are going to enter an apprenticeship start in high school, or what we would consider high school.
Yeah, I mean, this Marcus that tweeted in, who said he grew up in Switzerland, clearly started the apprenticeship by 15 because he was done at 18. So yeah, they're getting in there when the kids are really just trying to figure out in high school what they're interested in. Call here from Mike in Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What's your interest in this?
I'm actually in Northfield right now visiting a customer. I'm a small business owner. But my interest primarily as a small business owner is looking at this as a development path to get people in-house that have not just the skills, but the experience with our specific application. I also got to this point of owning this small business by going through a series of, I worked for a while, I went and I got an Associate of Applied Science degree, I went back to work, and then I went back to school finally to get my four-year engineering degree, and I feel like I got so much more out of that engineering degree knowing already the workforce and the industry that I wanted to work in and what I wanted to do with it. Just having that experience made that eventual next step much more valuable for me.
That makes a lot of sense. So that work interval really was able to define what you were going to get out of the school and the training on this. Yeah.
Right. The skills I was learning were much more tangible
yes,
to me because I already
sense.
Had the industry experience.
So does your company do apprenticeships now?
We are a very small company, mm-hmm. but our general philosophy is to try and hire people in without necessarily the skill sets that they will need, but to hire people in who have the other factors we're looking for, people with good attitude and good work ethic, and then we will invest in training them to be able to do what we need them to be able to do.
Jackie might have some advice on this. Jackie?
I couldn't say it better. Again, these are the trends and the momentum that we need people to buy into, the fact that you don't have to hit the ground running, that while you're learning, you're in a supported environment back at the shop, and there's a senior mentor paired with you helping you go through this process so that you can share the knowledge. We can do that knowledge transfer as we've got employees leaving our organization to retire, and we're not able to fill the younger generation as fast as the older ones are leaving, that the time you're in an apprenticeship and what you're learning and what you're developing makes you, in our case, a better machinist. And if you do choose the path of programming, you now know the fundamentals of machining, have done it, and you're going to take that with you to programming. Or if you go back to school, as that gentleman just said, and you go to be an engineer, you're a much better manufacturing engineer if you understand how to machine a part as well. So this is a system that can continue to feed itself. But then I also want to say it's okay. We have four levels of machining that you can get more specialized if you want to stay on that track.
Right.
So it's not just that one and done. It's a continual evolution, and there's so much more to it. I look at apprenticeships as the beginning. You go, you get that knowledge, you have that tangible certificate or degree, in our case a degree, you're employed, and then what? What's next? It's not stop, and then you're done. You can continue.
Bill, listen to this. Russell says on Twitter, teaching should be considered a master craft, and teachers should be apprenticed to a master teacher. The current educational approach doesn't adequately prepare new teachers, leading to a trial by fire first year, high dropout rates, and student debt. There is some of that with student teaching, but it isn't the full apprenticeship, is it?
It's not a full apprenticeship, but the traditional way we train teachers includes a large amount of practicum. So there's classroom practicum and then student teaching, which is their way of training underneath the master teacher. The bigger problem we have, again, is that today the pay of teachers has fallen way behind the pay of other college-educated workers. We've de-invested in our public education, and the major way we've done that is to cut teacher pay and to cut the number of teachers we put in front of our students. So the broader issue of getting Americans higher pay is deeper than apprenticeships. Again, Americans have had flat earnings if they have a college degree. Those with less than a college degree over the last 20 years have seen their earnings drop. So we have a bigger problem in getting wages up. And part of what happens when employers and employees get to negotiate this is that we can have workers at the table to assign value to worker skills and then to protect those jobs. And unfortunately, in the case of our teachers, we've just been cutting their pay. It's not a good solution for our nation going forward.
Manda says, I got a 4-year degree, and my brother, who's only a year older than I am, got a 2-year technical degree. He makes twice as much as I do. To the phones to Carla in Eden Prairie. Hey, Carla, hi.
Hi.
What are you curious about?
Well, I'm curious to know if you and your panelists are familiar with a program called Exploring. It's affiliated with Boy Scouts of America, and it is for young men and women, high school age, 14 through age 20, so even into their first years of college. And it is a hands-on career exploration program. In fact, Medtronic has had an exploring post for over 20 years, and it's one of our most popular posts. We have a lot in law enforcement and fire and EMS and healthcare, but just curious to know if you were familiar with this.
Jackie, do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't heard of that, but two recent developments that we've partnered with along those lines, which I am so excited to hear about, I am going to dig into this exploring, are the 4-H. They're having a huge foray into STEAM and STEM activities, which has been fantastic. And then Vex Robotics is another organization that is really thriving with this programmer, technical, engineering, the whole gameplay behind problem solving that then gets kids interested in the STEM and career exploration. So as an employer, we're going to the events where these kids and these thinkers are already, and we're trying to say, hey, you could actually make a career out of this. If you're interested in how these robots work, maybe you want to be a machinist. Maybe you want to be an engineer. So we do try to go where those are, and for organizations like this exploring, getting in front of your employer partners and industry, it's critical. You got to help us know where this stuff is happening, too. I love it.
You know, Bill, I've had a number of conversations where we've talked about why vocational schools, you know, still get a bad rap or have kind of an image problem. And I thought about it from your perspective. You teach at Howard. How many do you think of your students' parents would have been accepting or enthusiastic about the idea of a child saying, I don't want to go to college right now, or I may never go to college. I want to do a vocational training degree. I think some of this is resistance in parents with this idea that a 4-year degree is where it's at and everybody has to have one.
Well, again, the reinforcing message, and we have to deal with the reality, the reinforcing message of our economy has been that the gap between college educated workers and the rest of us has grown
right
by a large amount and continues to grow. And so parents are reticent to have their child with less than a college degree, knowing that fact. And knowing that since the Great Recession, we are still down almost 2 million manufacturing jobs. And given that construction, while it is on the rebound and finally has the number of jobs back to the 2008 peak, is still a very small share of all available jobs. So people constantly hear about your kid has to be into computers and computer science, and we want them in STEM. Well, I mean, Howard is different because we're the number one producer of blacks who will go on to medical school.
Uh-huh.
So our students are aspiring to a whole different life. And their parents would be very disappointed if they didn't become doctors.
I get it. Okay.
But we do have to deal with this reality. In other countries, people with less than a college degree are not suffering in the same way that they do in the United States.
Income wise,
or access to health care, or access for their children to a college education. So, I mean, there is a different lifestyle that they enjoy. Apprenticeships are an element because the industry there is committed to paying workers high wages and in partnership with their workers. So people love to say, you know, let's do what they do in Europe, but you have to understand that their whole society's view of working people and what working people get paid is different than here in the U.S.
Yeah, I think you've really, and that's the value of having an economist here in the discussion. You've really, I think, shown us what a huge change this would require to the way we think about professional life, but also the way the economy works. But it's not impossible. Right?
It's not impossible. It is something we can do if we would just decide that we would value the work that people do.
Yeah. To Aaron in Duluth. Hi, Aaron.
Hi there, Gary.
Hi. What's your experience with
this?
I
have a slight twist to apprenticeships. I went to one of what I believe are 5 work colleges in the country. Hmm. I attended Warren Wilson College outside of Asheville.
Uh-huh.
And regardless of any student's economic background, every student had to work. So we did everything from clean the dishes, clean the dorms, to run the full organic farm, to
wow.
I was an electrician. So I came away with those skills. I didn't go into the field, but one of my closest friends learned the crafts School of Stonemasonry and now has her own business. She's still in Asheville and has been running this business for years.
Excellent. How did you choose that school, Erin, of all the different places you could have gone?
Well, I'm not from North Carolina. I've lived all over the country, but the school is really committed to what they call a triad, so academics, work program, and then also social service, so giving back in countless ways. That just spoke to me, and that part of the country is beautiful.
Yeah. So what are you doing now with the degree?
I work in reproductive health. Social justice was my field. So.
I think going to that, it sounds like going to that school, you know, infused or complemented your interest in that, right?
Certainly. I think another thing that really spoke to me was so many institutions, you have the folks who are employed on the campus, and then you have the students, and then you have the faculty, and there's this huge discrepancy between, say, the working class and those folks that are working towards a degree. And Warren Wilson, because we all were working, that wasn't a part of our community.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to me. And, you know, like, that's something that I mean, absolutely, working in reproductive justice, I've carried that, you know, forward for the past 20 years.
I'm really glad you had a chance to call in, Erin. Thanks for that. Jackie, if you could speak to, we had a question on Twitter about this, you know, how about the policymakers at the state legislative level? What more would you want, or do you have what you need, and this just needs more attention?
I'll be honest. I think that there's a really good momentum happening right now with the policymakers and legislators. I think that what we need is industry to step up and education to step up and the governmental arm, and we need to have that kind of that triad mentality that she was just discussing, because, you know, at the end of the day, I am an employer. I'm a privately held company, and my goal, while maintaining a fantastic work environment and a feeder program, is to truly make a profit. And so I can't carry programs like this and work to change the educational institution or migrate on the laws and dictate what I need alone. And that's where you need industries to band together and communities to come together and surround this issue from the high schools to the guidance counselors and employers. Because when you're trying to do it alone, again, and run a business,
right,
it can get a little burdensome. So I think that they've done a lot of really positive work towards making this easier and easier. I also like to say you're welcome to a lot of people, because those of us who've been in it for a long time, it's been a fruit of labor. And hopefully right now you're seeing that at this point to enter into this conversation, it's hopefully much easier and a lot clearer. But there's been a number of years where it's been very complicated and not so much momentum this direction.
And it sounds a little lonely, right?
Yep,
it sounds like you felt like you were out there kind of plowing the field by yourself.
Yep.
Jackie, really good to have you on the show. Thanks for the insight and the experience.
Thank you as well.
And Bill, thank you. Thanks
oh,
for the
thanks
economics
for
of this and the insight. Bill Spriggs with us from Howard University, chief economist at the AFL-CIO. And Jackie Dukowitz with us from Ultra Machining Company, where they have a thriving apprenticeship, and she's director of human resources there. By the way, if you want to know and hear more about apprenticeships, you can listen to the APM Reports documentary, Old Idea, New Economy, at apmreports.org.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.